This is the Growing Up Rock Podcast with your hosts, Stephen Michael and Sunny Hollywood Pooney. Now, crank it up.
All right, so Hollywood, it's a lot quieter recording now that Rock and Pod is in the rearview mirror. Do you agree? It's definitely less background noise happening.
Not only the background noise, but we had the whole stage facing us. So anything that happened on the stage was blaring in our ears.
Well, I did my absolute best to clean up the audio that we recorded. And it is very listenable, and so I think the listeners will enjoy the content that we captured from the Nashville Rockin' Pod 3, which took place as we're recording this last weekend, and hopefully we'll get this episode out in the next week or two. But yeah, it was a blast, but it was quick, and that's for sure, right?
Yeah, we almost had the opposite problem this year that we had last year. Last year, we had so many interviews back to back to back to back. I think we had like 3 to 4 hours of content.
Yep.
This year, I remember you asking, I feel like we should be doing something. So, because I think we only had like 2 interviews. So, but I think it was more about, let's just kind of take it in. And I'm with you. You can't do a full interview in a place like that because it's just too noisy.
Yeah, it's too noisy and it's quick. You know, the artists really only have 15 minutes before they're on to their next interview. So yes, on purpose this year, we made sure that we were not signing up for 30 different interviews. And it was much more relaxed, much more casual for us. We got to talk to a whole bunch of our friends and a whole bunch of listeners. So I think it was really good for us. It was a great trip. We enjoyed it as usual. And, you know, it's like a flash of light. It's here and then it's gone.
Yeah, it's amazing because, you know, I was really looking forward to it because it's fun every year. But the amount of time you take looking forward to it and the amount of time that it actually is does not even match even closely. So, yeah, it was done before we knew it, just like you said.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to kind of lay out for the listeners what this episode is going to entail, and then we'll jump right into it. So basically, we're going to let you listeners listen to some of the content that we captured at Rock and Pod, and that's going to consist of a few segments with myself and Sonny. I think there's a segment in there where I have a conversation with my wife, Jennifer. And then we've got a couple of quick interviews with Jason Beeler from Saigon Kick and Brian Forsyth from Kicks. And the Brian Forsyth interview kind of gets cut a little bit short because at some point you'll hear Roxy Blue crank up the acoustic set on the stage, which was literally 10 feet away from our table and our mics were facing the stage. So we kind of cut that Brian Forsyth interview short, and I'm pretty sure at some point we'll be doing full-on interviews with both Jason and Brian that will be more in-depth. So look for those in the future in the upcoming months or so here on the Grown Up Rock Podcast. But at the end of all of this, once we get through the content that Sonny and I recorded, we'll come back and we'll kind of give you an overview of the weekend, how we thought it went, the pros, the cons, the things we thought were hits, the things we thought were misses, and just some of the stories from that weekend. Does that sound good to you, Mr. Hollywood?
That sounds really good. I'm really looking forward to the Jason Buehler conversation because that guy is a hoot.
He is fun. All right, so let's get into this. You guys enjoy the content from the Rockin' Pod Expo, and we will be back to recap everything after it's all done. All right, see you in a few. God damn it, Hollywood. Every time we think we're out, they pull us back in. And here we are again trying to communicate while sound checks and everything else are going on at the Nashville Rockin' Pod Part 3.
It's fun here, though. Who cares?
You having a good time thus
I'm
far?
I'm having a great time. Dude, last night was off the chain. And I recorded every minute of the Rock and Roll Residency last night.
You did, and I think we shared it on the Grown Up Rock Facebook page, so you can go out there and check out the entire thing because Sonny got the whole thing. But let's talk about that a little bit. So we had a couple of opener acts, which I missed the majority of. Lipstick Generation and 8-Ball were the opening acts, and then the Rock and Roll Residency came on, and they did what they always do, which is they're basically a cover band that does classic rock really well, but then they always invite their rock star friends, right?
That's right. They had, Ricky Dover Jr. played a couple of songs. Tony Harnell did a song last night. Michael Sweet did two songs last night.
And they did Soldiers Under Command.
They did Soldiers Under Command.
That was unbelievable.
Who's the Exodus bass player? I don't know his name.
Gibson? Jack Gibson, yeah.
Gibson, right?
Jack Gibson and Ricky Dover Jr., because people probably aren't that familiar with him, he was in the Biters, and then Tuck Smith, who essentially is the Biters, started up a new band called Tuck Smith and the Restless Hearts, and Ricky Dover is now part of that band, so... And Ricky is a good guitar player. That was fun as well. They did a couple of covers. I don't remember everything that they did. So, it was just a good solid set, a lot of fun. I had my glass of wine as normal, or two or three.
Sippy cups. So there are these, it's like a Yeti cup, but it's about, I'm going to ballpark it at 8 ounces. It's kind of sippy cup. He puts his $2 wine in so he doesn't have to buy $6 beers.
$3.99.
And it was $3.99, but it was on sale for $2, so he bought 2 bottles. So then he drinks his little sippy cup, and then when he's done with it, he puts it in his back pocket, and then he makes his beautiful wife, has to go upstairs, fill the sippy cup, and bring it back to him.
That's not true. She didn't fill my cup up last night.
I think so.
No. Oh, my God.
This song sucks.
We're going to be next to Peter Cesare the entire time from the I Love It Loudcast, and this is going to be singing nonstop.
In a bolt of lightning. I can't believe we're singing The Elder. What the hell's wrong with us?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so one of two good songs on The Elder.
Yeah, that's
right. Exactly. All right, so we're just getting started here today. We got a full day. We got interviews coming up today with Brian Forsyth from Kix. We got an interview coming up with Jason Buehler from Saigon Kick. We're close up and personal with all the rest of our podcast friends because everybody is tight living quarters here, and it's going to be fun.
It's going to be a blast. Can't wait. Let's get on with it.
All right.
She's a screamer! We'll be right back.
All right, so the lovely and talented Miss Jennifer is with us. Hey, baby.
Hey, how are you?
So, baby, as one of three females in a room of 450 guys, how does that feel?
Pretty normal. I work in the tech industry.
So, yeah, I mean, have you had any good people watching here? We got here late yesterday, so have you had any good experiences?
No, I'm looking forward to this opening because once that cosplay starts, that's when the real fun begins. There's been no demon sightings yet, so.
No, it's pretty casual. It's just record shoppers and merchandise people, black t-shirts.
It's all about the bands.
Yeah. Michael Sweet is already making his way onto the floor and doing interviews with a few things. Unfortunately, somebody scheduled him with our friends at Cobras and Fire the first thing this morning, which is a little tough on anybody, I think.
That's when you need to start your day with an Irish coffee.
Hi, Michael. God bless you. Take this chony wipe and a jerk sock from our table. Soldiers under command. I'll tell you, soldier under command. Soldier under hiding. With that.
Oh,
so,
man.
Did you enjoy last night's show?
Oh, my gosh. Incredible. Incredible. The Rock and Roll Residency is always fun, but with all the guest appearances, it was incredible.
Well, it's going to be a fun day. It's going to be a long day, and we're just getting started here, but I wanted to get your thoughts on early comings and goings of people.
I think it's great. I mean, it's certainly wonderful having everything under one roof, just having the opportunity to stand in the hallway and watch Dave Ellison and Michael Sweet just chatting it up. I mean, that's pretty awesome. It's not every day you're walking through the hall and you've got rock stars just hanging out, chewing the fat. So pretty neat.
What do you think about the new digs here at this hotel, everything contained in one place?
Oh, my gosh, so much more convenient. I mean, great to be able to have it all in one spot. I like having the shows right here. I mean, it was so super easy to grab a drink and just walk in, and there's the show. So definitely enjoy that.
Yeah, it's always good to have everything contained. Oh, shoot, we got our first cosplay that just walked in the door.
All right. Contest's on.
It's early in the morning.
They're going to try and win that guitar. I like it.
Yeah, they're giving away a lot of great things, a lot of great instruments.
Oh, my gosh. Incredible prizes. Great raffles. I mean, the value is just, you get so much for your money. You're talking to people about something you're really passionate about. You've got an opportunity to find vinyl that you've never been able to put your hands on. I mean, already people are walking around with records that it's honestly like they just want a treasure hunt or something.
Yeah, well, that's what the vinyl collectors
do. Kiss and all kinds of interesting things. So,
yeah,
I love sitting here. You talking about people watching, and you know, here's Sonny Pooney waving like a little girl at Drew Fortier because you talked to him last year at RMP2. And he was headed back to the green room. So, he was getting escorted back to the green rooms. But it's pretty neat. It's kind of fun to see all the returning folks. I think that might be one of the best things about this, right, is that it's really grown year over year. So a lot of the same faces that we saw in year one, folks that are just absolutely pioneers in the rock podcast era, and as well as all these new podcasts that kind of are pushing the genre, radio shows. Really excellent.
Yeah, it seems like more and more there's internet radio shows that are kind of coming into the space, which is fine because they're just taking their internet radio show and releasing it as a podcast.
Absolutely. It's really, you know, producing more great content and making it available where people want to consume it. So, you know, if you want to listen on the radio, listen on the radio, but it's normally not very convenient. So these internet shows and podcasts, on demand.
Yeah, and I like that it's not so corporatized. So it's more real. It's more, I think, for the true fan is what I'm trying to say. Like you don't have to hear the same song 50 times, right? You can play deeper cuts. It's just it's It's great. I get that there's not as much money in it, but it's great that it's not.
Is there any money in it?
Well, not yet. Not yet.
Haven't seen that yet.
We're hoping at some point it explodes, but truthfully, we do it for the love. We're not doing it for the money. We'd have quit a long time ago if it was for the money.
Absolutely. I was going to say, money only goes one way. That's out.
It cost us money. We're on our own dime to drive up here and set up.
That's why it's such a great time, and having the shows packed into it, so it's absolutely entertaining, be around folks that enjoy something that we're having such a great time with. It's awesome.
Yeah, some people go on vacations. We just come and vacation with a bunch of friends and do work.
Do work.
But
some
it's not
do work.
Work. It's not work if you love it, right?
They say that. I don't know. Yeah. I've watched you cursing about how long it took you to edit or make that cover art. So
yeah,
I think it is work.
To be fair, I curse all the time.
So. Fuck no, you don't.
It's all good. All right. Well, let's jump into our day here. We'll come back and visit this whole thing a little bit later on.
All right.
See ya. Welcome to the Grown Up Rock Podcast, Jason Beeler. How are you, dude?
I am absolutely fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Are you enjoying your time here at the Rockin' Pod?
You know, I've just started making the rounds. It seems like an awesome setup.
It's interesting because podcasts are full of music geeks that dive deep into the stuff. So they don't just know Love Is On The Way by Jason Bieler, right? They know all this stuff, the deeper cuts. For me, my entry point into Saigon Kick was the first album.
Oh, awesome.
I grew up in Florida, so I think that we probably treaded a lot of the same boards at some of the clubs, like the, what was it, the Button South down in...
The Button South, the Treehouse, Summers on the Beach.
Yeah, so we treaded a lot of the same boards back in that period of time. I think I was probably maybe 5 years earlier than you guys were. As far as cover bands and things like that. I started hearing about Saigon Kick, checked out the first album, loved it. So what we do with Growing Up Rock is we kind of like to dive down into the artist and where you guys come from. Where do your influences come? We have a series that we do that's Desert Island Albums. It's the building blocks of the music that we love today. So why don't you take us down that road? Tell us some of the influences that you look to.
Sure. I mean, I remember my earliest memories of, like, my parents had 8-tracks of, like, Meet the Beatles and The Fifth Dimension and, you know, records like that. Just hearing the music, just felt special, like a different whole world to me.
Right.
Hearing that stuff. So, and then AM radio, too, like just being a kid, little kid in the car and hearing, you know, that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that you kind of digested. A lot of the Motown stuff was on, you know, heavy. And then, you know, just getting a little bit older and then, you know, I think, I don't remember how old I was, but maybe getting Kiss Destroyer was like a life-changing, like that was the record I remember like going, okay.
It all kind of starts with Kiss, it seems like, when we talk to a lot of people.
Yeah, it's amazing how everything came from Kiss.
Yeah.
So that would be a pivotal record for me, you know, initially, like that I just knew I wanted to create music and do something like that. And then beyond that, I mean, there's so many critical concerts I saw. I mean, I got to see Ozzy on the Blizzard of Oz tour with Randy Rhoads and Rudy Sarzo and Tommy Aldridge. And that was like a life-changing, like, from a guitar playing point of view, like, that's what I wanted to do.
Right.
Like, so that Blizzard of Oz record and Diary of Mad Men, those two records were just like, it's really hard for me to pinpoint, like, just one record that changed it. It's more like an arc for me.
Agreed. Yeah, I don't think you can ever pinpoint just a single point. For me, a lot of the 45s, like you, I picked up from AM radio and things like that. I have these vivid memories of, like, for instance, going to the beach during the summer and hearing Cheap Trick, I Want You to Want Me on AM radio.
Oh, yeah.
That was a big point for me. You know, that kind of drove me down that path of rock and roll. So, I mean, I think you're 100% correct in saying that it's a series of things. You
and
know?
I think it's an awesome question, the Desert Island question, but I would wind up, you know, committing suicide via coconut strikes if I actually just picked, like, shortly into it, like 2 months later, I'd realize I brought the wrong record.
Well, for us, it's never going to be a single record. That's what's great about the series is we pick a album per series and visit that album and explain why and what it meant to us.
Right.
But there's going to be a ton of series on them because there's no such thing as a single.
Especially, though, I think for me and growing up the way we did and even as Saigon Kick as a band, like, our diversity just... You know, it would literally be everything from Barry Manilow to Meshuggah.
Yeah.
So it's such a wide berth of music that I love.
Yeah. Was there a point for you that when you first started playing guitar, were your parents musicians at all?
No.
When you first started playing guitar, what made you pick that instrument versus like drums or tuba or something?
The reason I wound up playing guitar was an accident. I mean, I think I told my mom I wanted to be like Gene Simmons, and she thought he played guitar. And brought a guitar home, and I was too embarrassed to kind of tell her she screwed up or, you know, whatever. So I got a guitar. But kind of, for me, music was just one of those things where I just kind of understood it. And more importantly, I kind of feel it understood me. And I was able to do stuff on it rather quickly. It wasn't... other people were struggling with certain things, and a lot of it started making sense to me. It was just kind of the way some people, I guess, are with English or math or,
yeah,
you know, or art or painting or... And that cycle just, to this day, I mean, it's just, I love doing it.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing because I had this conversation. Do you know who Craig Goldie is?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had this long conversation with Craig Goldie, and I honestly believe this, where you talked about, hey, it was kind of easy for you, and you picked it up fairly easy, and your parents weren't musicians beforehand. The same thing happens to somebody like me where I have to really seriously compartmentalize certain things, and it doesn't come easy to me. I think certain people are wired brain-wise or just wired a certain way, and Craig Goldie basically told me the same things that you're sort of telling me, is that he just he saw colors in music and it just made sense to him and it was very easy for him to digest.
I mean, it's not that things are so much easy. I think when you love something, the work is easy. So it's not like you don't have to work at things. It's just you don't think of it as working at things because you're having so much fun in the process of, you know, getting better or playing riffs or learning. It never seemed like math homework.
Right. When I say easy, I don't mean to say, oh, well, this was an easy thing. I think what I mean by easy is it's just easier for you to understand. It makes easier sense to you. I think all musicians had to work at it. Were you a lock yourself in a bedroom and practice all the time kind of guy?
I mean, as a kid, I spent years playing, you know, 8, 10, 12-hour days just playing, you know. Mm-hmm. But again, it wasn't so much like this structured practice, you know, sit down with a theory book and go over, you know.
Right.
It was just, I just loved doing it. And I think there's a process that happens. I think when you love doing something, you tend to get a little bit better at it. When you get a little bit better at it, your peer group when you're young notices you're better at it.
Right.
So you get that positive feedback. So you do it more.
Yeah.
And it just starts this wheel spinning of, you know, like a feedback cycle.
Right.
That ultimately helps, I think.
Are you a noodler? You noodle on guitar a lot?
I write a lot. Mm-hmm. So, but I play, I mean, given the opportunity, depending on my schedule, I mean, I'll have a guitar near me in the house all the time.
So you talk about writing a lot, and we've already talked about all the acoustic stuff you do, right? You do all these amazing acoustic shows, which if people, listeners, haven't gone out and seen Jason Beadler acoustically, please do, because it's just an entertaining show to go to. But aside from that, do you miss playing with a full-on electric, loud rock and roll band? Or
I think it's just a different thing. I mean, the cool thing about the acoustic shows is that you get to interact with people in a way that you can't do in a full-on, you know, heavier set. But there's a power to that that's amazing, too. And, you know, there's just different things at different times. You know, I mean, I'm just so happy to be making music at this point and still be able to do what I want to do and not have a real job.
Right.
That I count myself as lucky as you get, pretty much. So.
Right.
If there's something to do musically, I'm usually up for it.
Yeah, yeah. You talked about Randy Rhoads and seeing him and how it was sort of life-changing. Do you look back on, are you able to look back on that show and remember bits and pieces of it? Do you remember how that was, how he was?
Oh, for sure.
That particular night?
For sure. That show left a huge mark.
Yeah.
The tone, I still hear the guitar in my head.
Really?
Like there's something, you know, and obviously I was at the right age. It was the first show I'd ever seen like that.
Yeah.
Like rock show.
Yeah.
So all the elements were there to like spark a small kid to go like, this has got to be the coolest job anybody has. But definitely, but I mean, still remember like the guys that, you know, I've never been such like a Shred fan, but like I still remember like Gary Moore hearing End of the World on a station in New York when I was up there over the summer. And just being like, this similar kind of sense of like, oh my God.
Right.
What the hell is that guy doing? And still loved his playing and his vibrato. There's just something about the way he played.
Yeah.
That was just, to me, was different than everybody else and touched me. But like everybody else, everybody's, you know, got their guys.
How do you view yourself as a guitar player? You talked about shredders and things like that. How do you view yourself as a whole as a guitar player?
I don't really think of, I mean, I think of myself as a musician. Kind of. I'm not, you know, so can I play guitar? Yes. Do I solo and do things like that? Yes. But my first concern's always kind of been more song-based. But I love jamming. I love jazz. I love experimenting. I love, you know, if we get a bunch of great musicians, and I'll noodle about for endless amounts of time and repulse everybody.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think back to the days when Saigon Kick was at the pinnacle of their success, and I don't know if I ever recall you being singled out as a guitar hero, although at that point in time, guitar heroes were kind of on their way out. But you've always been a very above average, to me, a very above average guitar player. And so I was curious as to how you viewed yourself, and you answered that question perfectly with it's more about the music, and you would rather, I think you would rather have yourself viewed as a songwriter versus a guitar player.
To be put more a fine point on it, I just don't think about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't ever approach something like from a guitar player hat or I just, what do I want to do and create today?
Right.
And if sometimes that's more experimental, more high-end guitar playing, that's what I'll do.
Yeah.
And if it has no guitar solos, that's what I'll do. It's I don't really think about, you know, in terms of what I'm going to
right
try to do.
Right. You and I met briefly on the Monsters of Rock cruise. Was that your first Monsters of Rock cruise?
No, it was the last year.
Uh-huh.
So that would be my third.
How do you view that whole experience and that whole trend?
Larry, who runs that cruise, is an awesome guy. He'd been talking to me about doing it with Saigon for a couple of years. And I just wasn't sure. Like, the concept, I was like, I don't know, you know, do I want to be on a boat and stuck? And like, what, you know, so there was that going through my head. And it couldn't have been more different and wrong about that. I mean, it's the best people, the best time, the most fun I think you can have.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I don't think that you're the only artist that basically has that view. I've talked to a few other artists along the way, and they're like exactly the same thing. I don't know about being stuck on a boat with... And I explained to a couple of them because last year was my first cruise on Monsters of Rock. I'd cruised many times before. Me and my wife love it because it's nice and relaxing. Monsters of Rock, not so relaxing because you're nonstop going.
Everybody's so cool and respectful. Like, literally, I had more fun hanging at different people's tables, not just the bands I knew. I mean, I'm obviously I've been friends with Extreme forever. And,
right.
You know, getting to hang out with Dave Menichetti and the Queensryche guys are buds. And
yeah.
So that's fun on one side of it. But, I mean, half the time I'd be eating breakfast with just other people that were on the cruise. And, I mean, I can't say I ran into one person that wasn't cool and
have
fun.
You made friendships out of any of those?
Oh, for sure.
Over the
tons.
Years? Yeah, and probably that also happens as you do in these acoustic tours because it gives you more of an intimate setting, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I agree. The people on those cruises are just amazing.
Yeah.
The mentality of everybody is, you know, I even had a friend that used to cruise super high-end cruises.
Uh-huh.
And she was a friend of my friend.
Right.
She was like, I'm not going on that cruise. I'm not going on that cruise. And literally after the first day, she was like, I can't believe how nice and fun this, like, no one's, you know, everybody's just friendly and saying hi. And you know, it's like, it's such a good vibe.
Yeah.
You can't spend your vacation dollar in a more wise sense, in my opinion.
Right.
Not yeah, but everyone's, you know, like you said, everyone's super cool and fun to be with. And and it is expensive, but I think when you really, I was talking to somebody about it, like when you break down, like going to see a few of these bands, like I don't know how many fans of any particular cruise you'd be a fan of, but
yeah.
I'm sure you're going to go see 10 bands or 15 bands. You know, each of those tickets now are $50, $75, $100, whatever they are.
Yeah.
Plus the fact that you get to hang with everybody.
Yeah.
You know, it's really pretty good value for what you get.
Yeah, exactly. I agree 100%. When you start doing the math on it, it does really add up. It's absolutely true. So originally, my co-host who was here when you walked up, he said, hey, for the Jason Buehler interview, just start out the interview and say, ask Buehler this one question and then just sit back. And I said, okay. I said, yeah, what's that? And he said, ask Buehler, where do you stand on your political views? And then just sit back. And we started laughing. And the reason that he said that to me is because the one question that he and I remember is we saw you in one of the lounges. I think it was probably your second show or something. And you said, I don't want to talk too much politics or something like that to that effect. And you said, but 50% of you fuckers are crazy. And then that was it.
Yeah.
And then you just left it. You didn't say which side you were on, left or right. You just said 50% of you motherfuckers are crazy. That's it.
And I stand by that statement.
It's fun to watch you. It's fun to talk to you. It's fun to read your post. What's going on next?
A ton more shows coming up with Jeff Scott Soto. I've been writing and releasing a ton more stuff. Tours, a couple of things are coming up that are going to be pretty interesting, pretty musically challenging stuff. And just look, I mean, every day I can wake up and, you know, get to play today with David Ellefson and jam some tunes with him. And I mean, life is good, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There are people out there working.
Yeah. Have you ever considered or had offers thrown at you to be a hired gun for somebody, you know, Ringo Starr's band or whoever?
A couple things. I don't think I put myself out there as a gun for hire.
Uh-huh.
But it would have to be something I'd want to be able to sit on stage and dig it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not, I'm fortunate that I don't have to do something based on just a paycheck.
Right.
And I totally realize how fortunate I am to be able to say that.
Yeah.
Because there's no shame in earning a paycheck.
Right, yeah.
But since I can make the choice, I just want to be on stage feeling the music or have that music
be important to me. You want to like what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no shame in that.
Right, that would be the thing. But I like so much stuff that's probably even more silly than saying the otherwise. I mean, to play with the Bee Gees, to Barry Gibb would be unbelievable.
Right.
To play with, there's so many great songwriters, country stuff or, whatever. I mean, there's from left to right that I'm pretty easy to get excited about music.
Right. And I think a lot of that stuff is networking, and you seem like probably as long as you've been around, you and Jeff both.
Easy now. I didn't come here to be called old.
You guys have formed those relationships with a lot of various people in the industry, so it wouldn't surprise me to say, hey, what are you doing next month? Come out and do this.
Well, it's
this
nice. Thing. I mean, I think the guys that have stayed around, one, love music. It's kind of weeds out the want to be a rock star kind of thing.
Which, yeah, yeah.
Anybody can have that moment for 5 or 10 years. Very few people are Metallica and have a 30, 40 year amazing career.
Right.
So the people that are still doing it, there's a reason why. They're smart, they're talented, and they get it.
Yeah.
So when you talk around a lot of the guys that are even here today, it's like, for the most part, I can't speak for everybody. I don't know everybody, but
right.
The guys I know are like,
Yeah.
There's a reason why David Ellison's David Ellison.
Right.
And it's not an accident.
Yeah.
Right
on. Well, Jason, man, I appreciate your time. We are going to try and spend much more time a little bit later on and get into your career. But for now, I hope you have a great rest of your day at Rockin' Pod. Thanks so much for joining us on the Growing Up Rock podcast.
You too, buddy. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. We will talk to you later.
Take care.
Thanks. Welcome to the Growing Up Rock Podcast, Brian Forsyth. How are you, buddy?
Very good. Except I'm losing my voice.
We're coming to the end of a day. You've been a busy guy.
Yeah.
So what's going on, man? How are you enjoying Rockin' Pod 3?
No, it's pretty cool. I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah, because you're new to Nashville, right? You recently moved here?
Yeah, in March.
Yeah? How do you like it so far here?
I love it.
Yeah.
It's so relaxed. When I'm at home, it's just peaceful.
And it's an embracing community in terms of musicians. All the musicians kind of embrace each other quite well.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, not only the musicians, but the people in general, just very friendly.
Right. And where did you move here from? Maryland or from Cali?
From L.A.
L.A., okay. Yeah. Oh, well, God, that's night and day then, isn't it? I would move here from L.A.
Well, I like the weather out there, but
yeah.
Now that I've gotten here, I was a little leery of the weather here, but I can put up with it because, you know, everything else is so nice.
Yeah, and cost of living is much better here.
Well, that was the main motivation.
You can stretch that dollar a lot farther.
Yeah.
Well, so last night you sat in with the fellas from the Rock and Roll Residency, good friends of the show,
mm-hmm.
and you showed off a little bit of your influences. You sat in on a couple songs. You guys played Bad Company and Lynyrd Skynyrd, right?
Yeah.
So for you, when you were growing up, first of all, let's start with what drove you towards guitar versus tuba or drums or something else?
Well, seeing the Beatles on Ed Sullivan.
Really?
I saw the very first appearance, and that convinced me I wanted to play in a band and play guitar.
Mm-hmm.
But I did get interested in drums for a while.
Did you?
Yeah, my first band that I played in, I was the drummer. But I was much better on guitar, so I stuck with that.
Now, in the early days of Kix, when you guys were, I guess, Shoes, were you originally singing before Steve came into the band?
No.
You never sung?
No.
Somebody had told me that, and I hadn't heard that either, so I was like, really? And somebody said, yeah, originally he was singing before Steve made it in the band. I said,
no.
I don't ever remember that story.
No, they must have been on drugs.
Did you ever sing in any of your bands?
Well, in high school,
yeah,
back when nobody else would sing, so I just would sing because I was the only one that was willing to.
The singer was always the hardest part to find, right, in a band, it seems like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I sing backups here and there.
Right.
And I think even in the early, like before Kix was Kix, when we were the Shoes, I was still singing a little bit of backups.
Yeah.
But then once we became Kix, we stripped it down so both Ronnie and I are just the guitar players.
Right. I got to tell you, I don't know how many musicians I've sat across from over the years that have told me the Ed Sullivan Beatles story. How many modern day musicians today do you think that stupid Beatles show inspired to become, you know, musicians and rock stars? It's crazy, right?
Well, yeah, especially anyone that's like close to my age.
Yeah.
I mean, the newer kids, they're like Beatles.
Well, yeah, exactly. But I'm 53 this weekend. It's my birthday bash weekend.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you, man. And so the Beatles were just a tiny bit ahead of my time. I didn't see the Ed Sullivan things or anything like that. I was a kid of the late 70s and early 80s. But, I mean, from Gene Simmons to yourself to all these musicians, it's time and time again, and it doesn't matter when it comes to rock and roll. It all goes back to that Beatles. You know, nobody seems to say, oh, yeah, I remember seeing the Stones on this TV show or the Who on this TV show or Zeppelin or something like that. It always comes back to the Beatles, it seems like.
Well, I think it's because the Beatles, nobody had seen that before.
Yeah.
And, you know, once they hit, the Stones and the Who, they came after that. It was that defining moment, you know.
Do you fancy yourself more of a Beatles guy or a Stones guy? Or
well,
neither?
I started out as a Beatles guy, but graduated to the Stones.
Yeah, because, I mean, your vibe in general is very Stones.
Yeah.
Just the way you play and the drop down guitar and your stage presence and your whole vibe. I mean, your vibe is very Stones-ish, early Stones-ish. So that's why I ask, because when you start talking to me a lot about the Beatles, you know, I was like, so do you?
Well, okay, that's a good point. Maybe the Beatles, they inspired me to want to play in a band, but musically maybe not as much.
Yeah.
But the Stones, connected with me musically, especially from Beggar's Banquet on.
And the Stones are, I always viewed the Stones as like the Beatles were the clean side of rock and roll and the Stones were the dirty bad boys.
Right.
I mean, right?
But yeah, especially as far as image.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't even come, I'm not even talking about the I want to hold your hand type stuff or anything like that. I'm just talking overall because, I mean, the Beatles, I understand if the people realize how really dark some of the Beatles tunes are.
Oh, right. I know.
You know, right? And it's they can be very dirty and grungy as well, but there was just something with the Stones that kind of exude rock and roll, if you will, not that the Beatles weren't. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. I mean, look at Keith Richards. I mean, that's just the ultimate rock and roll.
Right.
His look, his vibe, his heroin habit.
Yeah. Well,
everything.
Yeah. There's a lot of that.
And the cigarettes sticking out of his mouth.
Right. Is there a cooler picture with a young Keith Richards with his guitar, his telly hung around his knees, and a cigarette hanging out of his mouth? You know?
Yeah.
Were you a big Aerosmith guy?
Yeah, yeah, I loved Aerosmith. Well, especially in the 70s.
Yeah.
I mean, I think my favorite record is Rocks.
Yeah. Over Toys in the Attic. I go back
and
forth.
I mean, that's a great record, too. But yeah. I think Rocks, if I had to pick one.
Yeah, Rocks. What other albums would you say over the course, and I'm not asking you to pick one, I'm just saying overall, what other albums kind of stuck out to you as pivotal records in forming your musical taste and driving you down the path that you're in today?
Well, the first one was Disraeli Gears.
Which is?
Cream.
By Cream.
Yeah.
Are you a big Clapton fan?
Yeah.
Yeah. Clapton, are you more of a Clapton fan than you are a Beck fan? Or do you like Beck at all?
Oh, I like him too.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I can relate. Eric Clapton, well, he was first for me. I mean,
yeah.
In fact, Disraeli Gears was the first actual album that I personally owned. Before that, I always listened to my older brother's records.
Okay.
But that was my first one that was my record. But, it has Sunshine of Your Love on it and all that.
Right.
And Jeff Beck, it's weird. I didn't get into Jeff Beck until mid-70s when he was doing like Blow by Blow and Wired.
Yeah.
Those two records. I love those two records.
And they really are two apples and orange type players. I mean, Clapton is completely different than Beck. But a lot of people talk about them in the same light in terms of being influential players. And to me, it's completely different. I mean, they're both amazing, but both completely different guys.
Well, it's like with any musician, you can't really compare two musicians because they're two different things, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they both have their own thing. And Jeff Beck, I love his, he just plays from this, well, not like Eric Clapton doesn't, but he just, it's pure feel, Jeff Beck. Like there's no, it's not, it's not like standard licks. It's just feel and emotion that comes through. It's really special.
Right. All right. So Cream. So what else?
Oh, wow. I'm trying to remember. Like early days. I love Jimi Hendrix too, but before I got better on guitar, he was way over my head. I just didn't understand where he was coming from. Now I go back and listen and I realize he was just playing like soul music, really, if you listen to it. But, I came up through the 60s, so I did love like the Memphis soul sound or the Muscle Shoals stuff.
Yeah.
But rock records, if I was to pick like say Disraeli Gears was the one, and then the next big one was probably Led Zeppelin 2.
Yeah.
I think Jimmy Page's playing on Led Zeppelin 2 was like the best out of all the Zeppelin stuff. I mean, there's a lot of other good stuff, but as far as, I don't know, there's special stuff on that record.
As a guitar player, I've heard this mentioned by other guitar players, especially when they're starting out and they're learning, they gravitate more towards the guitar players that they can emulate or figure out the solo or something. I know for a lot of players, they're like, that's why I loved Kiss so much, because I could play Ace Frehley's solos and figure them out, and they weren't so complex. And you just sort of, I thought I understood you to kind of allude to that, wherewith you were saying that Hendrix at one point was a little bit over your head.
Yeah.
So did you feel kind of those same things, and did you gravitate towards one record or one guitar player versus another when you were learning?
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's weird because now I listen to Hendrix and I know exactly what he's doing. It's like, I was just wasn't to that point yet back then. But what you're talking about learning guitar solos.
Ladies and gentlemen, they're back.
Jimmy Page was hard to imitate.
Yeah.
Because I think that's why I like Led Zeppelin too, because he played a little cleaner on that record. But most of the time, he sort of pushed this idea of what he was trying to do, but it would be so sloppy that if you tried to imitate it, you couldn't imitate it.
Right.
Which is, I don't know, it kind of makes it unique. In fact, personally, my favorite solos that I've done on records were mistakes.
Yeah.
And then I have to go back and try to learn it to play it live. Those are the hardest ones to do.
Have you ever had a problem going back and learning something you guys laid down on track because you wanted to pull it out of the bag and play it on the road, and you're like, what the hell did I do there?
Oh, yeah. Especially if it's been a few years, you know.
I've heard stories where some guitar players will go back and watch YouTube and find some kid playing their licks or something and go, okay, that's right, that's what I did there. Do you ever do that type stuff?
Well, that could backfire, because I've seen people demonstrate how to play Blow My Fuse.
Uh-huh.
I've never seen anybody get it right.
Oh, really?
Or there was one where the guy was really close and I was like, oh man, finally somebody got it, and then the further into the song it got, the worse further away he got from how it was supposed to be. It's almost like he concentrated at the beginning and then kind of like gave up.
Yeah. Do you ever have to bite your tongue and not comment a section?
Yeah.
That's cool. So this past tour that Kix did, we saw you guys on Monsters of Rock, this past Monsters of Rock cruise. Again, you guys are coming back again this year. I think they can't. I don't know. I've read where there's stipulations in the Monsters of Rock cruise where they say they can't sail without Kix on board. Is that true?
I don't know, but it seems to have been true.
So last year you guys played Blow My Fuse front to back. Are you guys going to be doing anything special for this upcoming 2020 cruise?
Yeah, actually, we've been talking about that. We're thinking about doing like a deep tracks set.
Oh God, please!
So we're throwing out ideas about songs to throw in that we haven't done.
Yeah,
I mean, so far everybody keeps bringing up songs that we've done, but we haven't done in a while. And I'm like, well, why don't we do something we've not done?
Can I throw a suggestion out there? You can take back to the band.
Sure.
I would do a post, or get somebody to post on your behalf. Get somebody to post on your behalf in the Monsters of Rock forum and let the fans decide what they want you guys to play.
Yeah, we were thinking about that, but you know, that could be opening a can of worms, but
it could. But
we can always just choose the
exactly.
Cool ones, you know.
They could pick something that you guys can't pull off live, maybe because of Steve's voice or something, but if it's done right and it gives you the opportunity, at least you guys could see what they're thinking. Right?
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
Yeah, that's been brought up too.
So we're not going to get too much done out of this in the audio quality wise, which is fine, because that's exactly why I said, hey, we'll do a proper interview at a little bit later time. But Brian, thanks for joining the Grown Up Rock Podcast, and we look forward to talking to you soon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm definitely into doing the full version.
Thanks, man.
Make me an offer. Then attack me.
All right, Hollywood, we're towards the end of the day here. How's it going for you today?
Good whirlwind of fun with some dude that looks like Kid Rock over there. Actually, that's Kid Kentucky. He's actually an actual impersonator.
Yeah, somebody actually thought that that was Kid Rock. I think our friend Steve Wright from Potter and Hell podcast was stalking him.
Yeah, and I even looked at him. I'm like, it's close, but he's about 10 years too young.
Nah, I heard he wanted to get his autograph for Dylan.
Nice. Crazy. No. It was fun, and got to meet a bunch of people, and got a few autographs, bought a couple of vinyl things, so it's been a good day.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I mean, it's definitely been packed. There seems like, would you say that there's been more people at this one than last year?
Yeah, I think it would be bad to think it's not going to grow every year. It's going to grow every year. There's no way around that.
Yeah, and this is a much bigger footprint, so it's kind of hard to tell, right?
Yeah. The way I was kind of judging it, as long as Elfson or Harnell or Sweet, if they want to do autographs, they're busy the entire time.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be a line that's 28,000 people long.
That's right.
Right? As long as they're busy, that's all that matters, right?
Right. Yeah, agreed. I know some of the artists we talked to just kind of did our short 10 or 15 minutes, but hopefully we'll set something up in the future where we'll have a little bit more extended conversation with both of our guests today. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's kind of tough for both of us to interview somebody at the same time here because it's a tight fit.
That's right. How do you think our live stream went off today?
I thought it went well. I thought all your picks were wrong, mine were right. And I think the crowd voted in my favor. And, yeah.
We had people, at least we had people watching us in the room. It wasn't empty.
Yeah, I think we had just as many people as Cobras and Fire did, but, they're a bigger podcast than us, so.
I think we had more.
I don't know about that.
I'm pretty sure we had more.
Well, I don't know.
I'm almost positive we had more.
Okay, then I'm almost positive you're wrong.
So we had more, so... So I think I counted 20 to 30,000 people more for our podcast stream than at Cobras and Fire.
Yeah, no, the live stream I thought was good. I thought it was a good idea. I think we're learning every year. We learn different things every year. It's probably, I would think next year is probably a little too big to do in one room. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, there's definitely a couple of things that I figured from this experience that I would suggest to Chris that he change, just sort of minor things.
Did you buy any raffle tickets?
I did not. Did they do the raffle already?
No.
No, okay.
Are you going to buy any raffle tickets?
No, I never win.
Well, if you don't buy any, how do you expect to win?
Well, I never win, so there's no point in buying them.
Wow, that is the worst reasoning I've ever heard in my fucking life.
Well, we'll see if you win.
We will. Then what?
Then maybe it's worth my while to buy some.
But then it'll be too late.
Not for the next one.
Yeah, but then the next one, your guy never wins, so I'm not going to do it.
Did I tell you the story about how my cat had $3,000 worth of surgery and I don't have extra money?
Wow. $5.
Did I tell you how my cat had $3,000 worth of surgery?
Wow.
Dude, as it is, I've got to go and sell my body down on Broadway tonight just to pay for this trip.
Okay, that'll get $1 out of the $5 you need for the raffle.
That's $1 closer. Don't hate. Have you met any of the new podcasters that are here this year?
Yeah. I met met Brad Page, met Judy, met Eric from the Electric Crush.
Yeah.
I met Jeff Reed from Hops and Metal Show.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the rest right now.
Anything interesting happen to you today? No.
No, probably not. I mean, it's all interesting. I mean, you know, that's kind of weird, but
yeah,
it's
wasn't
fun.
Wasn't the right word. Yeah.
It's fun.
It's been fairly subdued. I mean, I think I enjoyed the fact that we didn't take on as much as we did last year, so that definitely made it more evenly paced for me. So,
yeah, I think that's definitely the way to go.
It was nice. Yep. So, all right, cool. Well, I don't know if you're going to Dave Elson tonight. Probably not, but I am, so we might have to recap that and talk about that at the end. We'll see. So this may be the last time you hear from our Rockin' Pod recap, or it may not.
That's correct.
Okay.
Well, let's go over to Pete.
Is he ready for us?
Yeah, he's ready for us.
All right. Continue listening to these two idiots over on the I Love It Loudcast.
Later.
Later.
Everyone's got a rock and roll story to tell, and we want to hear yours. So go to our website at growinguprock.com. That's one word, growinuprock.com. Or visit us on our Facebook page at Growing Up Rock and tell us all about it.
All right. So that was the content we captured from Rockin' Pod. Like we said, it was fairly brief, not a ton of stuff there, unlike the year before last, which we had just tons of. But that gave us a lot more opportunity to take it all in, breathe, and just generally have a good time. It was my birthday bash weekend, which, I don't want to go too far into it, but sounds like somebody else actually had another birthday bash weekend, at least according to Facebook, right?
And the guitar playing I heard was just as good as yours.
But I think we yeah, probably worse than mine, but I think we proved that was a false thing, right? They had come online saying that was all just a hoax posting. In fact, somebody shared the actual video that audio came from, which was like entitled "The Worst Guitar Solo Ever" or something. So once again, trolls trolling the internet or creating misinformation. But anyway,
that doesn't surprise me. I only saw it because it ended up in my feed. Otherwise, I wasn't even looking for it.
It was amusing, though, I must say. I did enjoy listening to it, just thinking it kind of made me laugh. Of course, the people that are going, "What the hell are you guys talking about?" We're talking about Vinnie Vincent had a birthday bash and supposedly the same hotel on the same day that Rockin' Pod was going on. But I got to be honest, I never saw anybody that looked like they were going to that party, and certainly never saw Vinnie, but apparently it did take place at some point, and people were saying that he cooked all the food for them and all this other stuff. So, yeah, enjoy that.
I'm not sure I'd pay $300 for that, but I might pay $300 for the activity that we heard about in the bathroom. That I might pay to see, depending on who it is.
All right. So why don't we start at the top and go into all this? But there's lots of stories that we want to share with the listeners as far as our weekend in Nashville for Rockin' Pod. And that was certainly a piece of it. But you want to come back to that? Should we start at the top and work our way down?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So we both got into Nashville on Friday. We both went to lunch with Baco and Andy Schau, and had a great lunch, had good conversation, and then dove straight into the weekend from there pretty much, right?
Yeah, Friday there was a mixer, which was kind of cool because, you know, you catch up with friends as they're kind of coming into town. And then there was three bands that played. What was it? Lipstick Generation, correct? And then 8-Ball, and then the Rock and Roll Residency plus special guests.
Yep, that's correct. And who were some of those special guests, and do you remember what they played?
All right, so Foresight came on and did Ooh That Smell and Can't Get Enough of Your Love. Yep. Harnell came on and did Good Time, Bad Times. Michael Sweet came on and did Ain't Talking About Love and Soldiers Under Command. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Soldiers Under Command was awesome. It was very cool to see him do that.
And then the dude from Exodus joined on that, didn't he?
Yeah, I think you might be right. I think that sounds about right. Yeah, there were a few other guests that came on here and there, but overall, I think that's about it. It was a good time. I know that we posted, you recorded that whole concert, you live streamed that whole concert, and it's on the Growing Up Rock Facebook page. So if anybody out there wants to go check it out, you can see it there. Sonny was set up right, pretty much right next to the stage, so I know you saw it all.
Oh, it was a great show. They sounded great. Man, Jeremy can play the guitar. because I was standing right next to him, that was the side that I was set up on, watching him play guitar, that guy is no joke.
Yeah, both he and Phil are great players. For sure. That was pretty much the entire evening. Did we miss anything from Friday? I don't think so.
No, I think we just hung out in the lobby afterwards. And, you know, for us podcasters and just, you know, as humans, we're making these new friends that we didn't know before. So the lobby, you know, kind of just kind of sounds like, oh, you guys were hanging out in the lobby, big deal. To us, it is, because that's where the friendships are really getting strengthened.
Yeah, you're networking and you're, yeah, exactly. That's a great word, strengthening relationships, because these are people you see once a year, maybe if you're lucky, and there's just not a lot of time to, you know, get to know somebody, basically, not even on a weekend.
Yeah, and then when the podcast expo is actually going on, everybody's so in tune to the schedule and the celebrities moving from one place to another and, you know, recording their own things and trying to get set up and take down. And then they're trying to shop and have fun too. You really don't get time to sit down and talk to friends during the expo. It really has to happen either before or after.
And then the expo kicks off early on Saturday. So as podcasters that are setting up a table and getting your equipment set up and things such as that, we pretty much were down there by 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. And after being up till midnight, 1 o'clock, you know, it's it's little or no sleep. So, and then on top of it, if you've had a couple of glasses of wine from your sippy cup, right? So we started the expo on Saturday. We got off to a great start. It was different this year than in previous years because, to me, it felt like there was a crowd almost instantly, as opposed to it kind of took time to build up in the last couple of years. Would you agree or disagree?
Yeah, I would agree with that, partially because of where it was at, because that hotel just seems to have a little bit more hustle and bustle, first of all. Second, you know, we got some great artists, so there's no reason not to be there early. You know, Michael Sweet, especially, and Elfson, too. They were signing stuff pretty much the whole time they were out and about, so it's not like they really had downtime. Then you couple that with everybody got 15-minute interviews, the people that did get interviews. Not every podcaster interviewed everybody because nobody would want to do that anyway. But then you got those people moving around. They all got handlers. Then you got people looking through the vinyl. So there's just a lot of folks hanging around, that's for sure.
Yep, and in addition to vinyl, they also had like just different, you know, memorabilia and stuff like that. I know I saw a lot of like Kiss figures and stuff like that that was Kiss related, as well as a few odds and ends. So it wasn't just vinyl, I don't think, right?
Right. Yeah, because Phil had all his stuff. He usually comes to all the Kiss expos.
Yeah.
Did you buy anything? I bought a couple things.
I did not buy anything, but I will say that being that it was my birthday weekend, you bought me a very nice gift, which was three pieces of vinyl that were completely awesome and a huge surprise for me. But you bought me the first black and blue record, which was signed to me by Tommy Thayer, which I thought was awesome. And then you bought me the Y&T Contagious record that you and I had discussed with Dave Menichetti, how Boys Night Out, which is now L.A. Rocks on the Contagious record. The original version was called Boys Night Out, and it's listed like that on the first pressings of the vinyl. So you gave me that, and then you gave me almost a beautiful copy of the Aerosmith's Bootleg Live, which is an incredible double live album. So once again, thank you very much. That was awesome and a great surprise for me. But other than that, no, I didn't purchase any vinyl on there. So,
oh, I'm glad you enjoyed that stuff. I bought a couple of things. I bought Flight 666 on like a white vinyl, I think it is. I haven't opened it yet. It's either white or blue vinyl. And then I got Bon Jovi's Slippery When Wet, the original cover, Japanese edition.
Ah, cool.
Yeah, I found that because I decided I'm going to get all my Desert Island albums on vinyl, or I'm going to try. Not everything I love is on vinyl, but I'm going to at least have those, and maybe one day I'll put them on the walls or something. I don't know.
Where are you at with that right now? Like, are you at 50%, 25%? Where are you at with that goal?
Yeah, I obviously have it all on digital. I have it all on CD. I have probably about 10% of it on cassette and about half of it on vinyl.
So you're 50% then to your goal.
Yeah.
Very cool. I don't know how I missed that you picked up those two pieces of vinyl. I never saw you carrying any vinyl around or anything.
Yeah, I went when I had Michael Sweet sign a couple of things for me. I bought it at the same time.
Okay. Very cool. Awesome. So what else went on at this? We saw tons of our friends. Man, it was nice to see like David Cathy and Bill Elam and his daughter, Brianna, I think her name is. Jeff Reed, Brian Davis, all our podcaster friends, of course. Just a really great hang with everybody, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, we met a lot of old friends, I guess now you would call them, because it's been 2-3 years.
Yeah.
And a few folks we had never met before. I remember thinking, I don't know if you remember me telling you where Michael was about to go get interviewed by Baco and Luce. So they were one of his first interviews. So I remember him walking over there going, oh, please don't get mad and leave. They're just kidding. They hadn't even said one word. They hadn't even shook his hand yet. And they've interviewed him a couple of times, so he knows what he's getting into. But I just remember thinking, they're good guys. Don't take them too serious.
Yeah. I haven't listened to any of their interviews yet, so I'm sure they were entertaining. I'm looking forward to listening to their interview with Jason Beeler, because that's a match made in heaven, those guys in Beeler.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt.
So, yeah, I mean, just really great weekend to see people you only get a chance to see once a year. And, it just goes by so fast, but I think it does a lot to cement or help build some of the relationships that you and I created 3 years ago, right?
Yeah, absolutely, no doubt. And then after the expo, there was a few things going on. So there was Elfson had a show. He was doing that Bastery thing.
Yep.
And there was a couple other bands playing. A couple of us decided we wanted to go to dinner instead and maybe just hang out versus going to the show. So I think a few of us split up.
We did, but you, me, and Steve Wright and BB from the Potter and Hill podcast hopped in a car and decided to head to dinner together before Bastery was happening, because I thought we could get to dinner and get back in time to catch some of the Bastery, and I was right. You want to tell the listeners exactly what kind of adventure we went on to go to dinner?
So when these guys ask me, like, what kind of food you want or where do you want to go to dinner, if you've ever met me, I'm the size that doesn't really have any picky items. I just eat whatever's in front of me. So I usually just say, whatever. So they say family dining. So I'm like, all right, sounds good. Well, you know, for those listeners that live on the East Coast or West Coast, most likely family dining to you means, you know, you go, you have 4 or 5 people with you, you go to a table, instead of you each ordering your own entree, there's just food that comes, right? Kind of like bread, spaghetti, maybe a lasagna or whatever, if you're going to an Italian place, and you kind of share it like a Thanksgiving dinner. Well, this family-style dining is a little bit different in the South. So we go in, and basically it's a buffet-style type pay. So you just pay for basically being there, and you can eat as much as you want. But there's no buffet. What happens is, if you've ever been to a teppanyaki-type place where the guy's cooking in front of you and on the grill or whatever, and if you only bring like 2 or 3 people, usually they seat you with others on a table because – they don't want to have that guy cooking for just 2 or 3 people. They want to cook for like 8, right? So this is very, very similar. We go to sit at a table, and it's a table that's fairly long and probably has like 10 or 12 chairs around it. But there's already 3 people sitting on one side of this table, and they sat us basically kind of next to them and around them. So I'm sitting next to this lady. Seems like a nice lady. I didn't really say anything to her because I'm an ass and that's who I am. And we're just kind of sitting there and BB sits next to me and BB and I are like, all right, we're hungry. Like kind of where's the food? And Jen, your beautiful wife, says, well, you just, you know, you get the food from over there. And I'm thinking, that's their food. She was pointing to the folks that were already sitting there. And I'm like, that's their food. And then the lady next to me, like, hands me her bread. And I think I said, ma'am, we have food coming. I can wait. And she said something like, this is your food. And I'm like, what? And Jen says, go ahead and take it. So I took a piece of bread and I handed it to BB. And BB and I are kind of looking around like, are we getting punked or are we about to get punched? Or, you know, because in Oakland, you reach for somebody else's bread that you don't know, it ain't going to go well. And so this happened with the gravy and the potatoes and the macaroni and cheese and the catfish. And I'm like, okay, so this is the equivalent of you basically breaking into somebody's house during Thanksgiving dinner and plop down at the dinner table and just start basically eating. That's basically what this is.
Basically, I'm the only one that was sitting at our table out of the group of us that's Southern born. So Jen was born in New York, BB and Steve both born up north, and Sonny, of course, a California boy for the most part. So nobody's really that experienced with the South except for me. So these boarding houses are pretty normal to me. I mean, there used to be a bunch of them at one point in time, and there's a lot less of them now. And they're these old Southern style houses that were at one time boarding houses. And this place, which was, it was either Mondell's or Modell's. I can't really remember what the name of it was, but it came recommended because it was fairly close to the hotel. It was out by the airport. It was like literally out in the middle of nowhere at the end of a runway for the airport. And, you know, it had pretty good ratings. So people recommended it to us. So we were like, okay, cool, quick, convenient, easy. So that's where we went for dinner. And I knew the drill. I knew sitting down, they were going to have these big bowls of food and you were going to share a table with other people and you were going to pass around the bowls and the bread just as normal. So, you know, it was no big deal to me, but the looks on Sonny and Steve and BB's face was priceless. Me and my wife laughed about that for about a half hour after it was all over. We were like, I wish we could have taken pictures of the looks on you guys' faces. It was completely insane. So, but overall, you know, pretty much Southern fare, fried chicken, mashed potatoes with gravy, cornbread, catfish. It was, you know, it was a spread. You take a little bit of everything. It was like Thanksgiving dinner. You won't leave there hungry, put it that way.
Yeah, it was good food, no doubt. So then after dinner, we come back, and you went to the show, right?
Yeah, me and Jen went because when we got back, there was still an opening act on, 8-Ball, who had opened for the residency the night before. They were opening again for the whole pastry thing. So Jen and I went back up to the room. We changed into some comfortable clothes, came down and checked out Pastry. And Pastry was essentially Dave Ellison and Tom Hazard with guests from all over the place. So it was like a residency show, only instead of classic rock and the residency guys, it was more heavy stuff and Dave Ellison and Tom Hazard. But then they got into some classic stuff. So they started and they did some Megadeth stuff and things like that, and some stuff off of this new CD that Dave has coming out. But then they got into some of Dave's early influences and played like some Montrose, and I'm trying to remember what else they did, but they did all kinds of stuff. And so it was cool. They had Jason Beeler come up, and Tony Harnell came up, and the residency guys came up and sat in on their set, and all kinds of different people. So it was all put together by Tyson Leslie, who does this rare hair thing in Nashville. And he's also the keyboard player for Vixen, when they're out on the road. So Tyson's kind of a Nashville staple musician type guy.
Well, yeah, that sounded like fun. I just hung out in the lobby and just talked to some friends. I'm not the biggest Megadeth fan. Just, I'm not. And I'm sure that there was some stuff I probably would have enjoyed, but honestly, I pretty much had it with, you know, I can only handle so much live music when there's a lot of other things to do. The Monsters of Rock Cruise is different. I can do as much live music as I want to, but I really wanted to hang out with some friends that I just don't get to talk to, so I did that instead.
Yeah. And then we all came together after it was all over anyway, so you want to tell the folks what brilliant thing we did after that?
I had this idea to do a Kiss song draft. So there's other podcasts like our buddies that Shouted Out Loudcast that have done kind of like a draft your own band thing. And some other podcasts have done like draft your, you know, top five albums or stuff like that. Well, I'm a big fantasy football and a fantasy baseball guy. So I wanted to do a draft that was kind of in that vein. So what we did was I put together a list of all the songs of all the Kiss studio albums and basically between the solo albums, the studio albums, and then kind of the hosh-posh songs that belong on Live 2 or Smashes and Thrashes, and kind of made like a 25th album. And the intent was that we would do a fantasy football style draft, and you are supposed to draft one song off an album. So, and then you would listen to that playlist of 25 songs for the next month or so. And maybe we throw it up on Facebook and, hey, who had the best draft, that kind of thing. And so I had a draft board, we had labels, we threw a Yeti mic in the middle of the room. And, you know, we recorded a podcast with 20 people in the same room. The audio came out all right. There's some, you know, shuffling of papers when I'm frantically looking for a label and that kind of thing. So you hear that a little bit. But the spontaneous conversations are like podcast gold. So we are probably going to release that on the Podcast Rock City feed. I will let folks know via Facebook, et cetera, when that happens. But it was a fun time. Your buddy here, Steven, drafted a great list of songs. He took forever to draft, but at least he didn't break the rules like our buddy Steve Wright that jacked up basically the entire draft. I had to fix two more things after I got home, after I re-listened to it.
Steve Wright completely just, I think he might have been a little bit out of his mind. I think maybe Steve had a drink or two and was a little bit absent-minded because he was not getting the rules down. And it was late at night, so it was pretty late. But like Sonny said, we shoved about, you know, 15 to 20 podcasters and their wives in a small room. And it was just, it was funny because throughout the night, there were a couple people. Chris Sinzak stuck his head in. I think Chris White stuck her head in. It's like, what are y'all doing? So it was good fun. But yeah, I was lucky enough to pull the first draft in the whole thing. And if anybody knows anything about drafting, you get the first draft, but then when it comes back around, you get two. So really, to be first or be last is probably two great places to be in a draft. And I fared pretty well. I was pretty damn happy with my list. There are definitely a few exceptions. I think I would have gotten to one or two albums maybe a little bit quicker than I got to them, because by the time I got to them, I didn't get, you know, what I would think is a great song, but I took what I could. And I think overall, my list is pretty damn good.
And then you got to love it, because if you're a Kiss fan, you know that a lot of that material is a little bit tongue-in-cheek, might be a little hashtag Me Too-ish a little bit, you know, but you got to remember it was the 80s and the 70s. But right before we went into the draft, there was a discovery by Mr. Cicery that a couple were pleasuring each other in one of the bathroom stalls of the men's bathroom. So have that coupled right before you draft songs like, you know, No, No, No and Making Love and and some of those, My Way, and some of these songs that are very suggestive, it made out to a very fun conversation.
At least it wasn't Nothing to Lose. Hey-o!
Nice.
Yeah, only at Rockin' Pod, that's all I can say. So that was pretty much the end of the evening, but it was a great time. Overall, I think the event was fantastic. One part you left out, and I'm gonna revisit this part because we didn't talk too much about that. As part of the Rockin' Pod, they always have these raffles and these giveaways. It's their way to try and raise money to pay some of the bills for Rockin' Pod because it costs money to put these things on. So they had some guitars donated, had a signed acoustic by all the guys in Tesla, and they had a Dave Ellison bass guitar that was beautiful that was signed, and a Kramer Flying V, and they had this other beautiful guitar that I don't quite recall which one it was, but it was, I remember thinking it was quite nice.
Oh, a Dean Vendetta.
Yeah, it was a Vendetta.
Yeah.
And they had some, you know, packs, click t-shirt packs, and just some different fan packs that were available as well. So they raffled all this stuff off, and Sonny bought a bunch of tickets because the idea was Sonny was going to buy tickets, and then throughout the day he was just going to give tickets away to listeners and people like that. But Sonny also held on to, I think, a handful of tickets himself. And so we get pretty much through the entire raffle, and towards the end of the raffle, the Flying V comes up, and Sonny has the winning ticket. So Sonny goes and grabs the guitar because he wins the Kramer Flying V out of all the stuff that he got, and he comes back, and without even skipping a beat, once he jumps off stage with the Flying V, he hands it to a listener and his son that we had just met this weekend, Curtis and his son, Christian, who both had a birthday today, as a matter of fact, as we're recording this. Both of their birthday is today. And so Sonny hands the guitar to Christian, his son, and walks away. And that was it. And everybody was just kind of like jaw hitting the ground. Like, seriously, that just happened? The kid couldn't believe it. The father couldn't believe it. Hell, I couldn't believe it because I was going to be the next Eddie Van Halen with that. And Sonny gives my only chance away. What the hell, Sonny?
Yeah, that kid's got a better shot at that than you do. I could tell you that.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
And I'm not a guitar player. And, you know, my kids have been very fortunate to have everything that they want. And I had talked to Curtis and Christian earlier in the day and found out that Christian was taking up the bass just like my son is. And he's a freshman. And that's when my son took up bass and he ended up getting a music partial music scholarship. So I was telling Christian about, you know, that, you know, if you really want to do it, that's the way to do it. And he was telling me he was taking guitar lessons. And you know, what am I going to do with another guitar? I got a bunch here I don't play. So figured it would be in much better hands, much better used, and will sound a hell of a lot better in somebody's hands that knows what they're doing versus me or you.
Yeah, that was super cool. And I think that it'll, you know, I think it'll come back to you time and time again. And, you know, it's just a super cool thing to do. We're going to post a blog because the one thing we didn't know at the time is that Curtis is a blogger. So he writes blogs, and he happened to write a blog and sort of share this experience as well as the overall experience of Rockin' Pod in his blog. And we'll post that on the Growing Up Rock Facebook page so you guys can check it out. But it was super cool. I think it was just an overall great experience for everybody involved with that. So kudos to my friend Hollywood, doing it right. That was awesome. Overall, how do you think the weekend went?
I thought it was great. I mean, you cannot ask for more than we're at Rockin' Pod 1. It was good. We go to the second one. It's even better. We go to the third one. It's even better. So I know Chris puts a lot of work into this stuff. And I wish there was an easier way to do it for Chris, because I think he puts a lot on himself to do it, but he wants to do the job right. And there is absolutely no doubt that the job's getting done right. I don't remember anybody complaining about anything. If you wanted food, it was available. All you had to do was go get it. If you wanted drink, it was right outside the room. You know, there was a coffee place in the place. There was a restaurant in the hotel. Like, there's just not a lot of downside. And it's a huge room, and there's a lot of background noise. But it's supposed to have a lot of people. If you want to, I guess, have no noise, stay in your basement.
Yeah, I think overall, listen, first of all, Chris and Zach and his team that works on this have done an amazing job. As Sonny said, this thing has grown consistently because we were there in year one. And so we know exactly what it was year one, and we know exactly what it was in year three. And the growth is amazing. How any musical artist wouldn't want to be a part of this is beyond me, because an artist can do 15 interviews with 15 different podcasts and get their story out there, or their music out there, or whatever it is that they're trying to get out there. So it's a really a great opportunity for artists. In my opinion, artists should almost be paying Chris to come and do this thing. So lots and lots of pros to this whole thing. Yeah, for my taste, it was a little bit cramped. It was a little bit loud. I don't know how to remedy all that, because if you want it to be big, then you're going to have all that stuff. Initially, I thought maybe the layout of the room might have been done a little bit differently to prevent some of the noise that was happening, but that's certainly just a minor adjustment in layout, if anything. The one thing that I think I would have done differently, or the one thing that I think I would suggest, is probably... So Sonny and I took part in this live recording of the podcast. So there were about four or five podcasts that each did a 30-minute show in a separate room. And if people wanted to attend, they could. If not, we recorded it. We'll release it later. And so Sonny and I will definitely release it. We did a Striper album ranking. Since Michael Sweet was there, we figured that that would be great for Sonny and I to do our 10-to-1 Striper albums and rank them. The only thing that I would have done probably differently is that I think to each podcast that was doing an interview with an artist, I would have had that artist, one of the artists, do the interview for the live podcast. Does that make sense?
No, I'm lost.
In other words, we interviewed Jason Bieler and Brian Forsyth, right?
Oh, so instead of us doing a topic during our half hour live,
right,
we're interviewing Jason instead.
Correct.
And then, because, like, Cobras of Fire is doing Michael Sweet, and Digital Kill is doing Forsyth, that kind of thing.
Correct. And the reason I say that is because, A, you're going to get good quality of your interview you're doing, and B, it gives the audience, and, you know, it gives them some incentive to go, right? Because maybe some of the audience members are interested in Bieler, interested in Michael Sweet interview, or you know what I'm saying? It's just, I think it would be more exciting for the audience. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I think Chris had the right idea by giving the listener an opportunity to watch a podcast be recorded live, but you can enhance that opportunity by also be able to listen to an interview being done. So you get the best of both worlds. You get to see it live, and you get to hear the interview being done with one of the artists. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was trying to say, but I was just saying it a lot slower and couldn't quite get it across.
And confused everybody, including me.
Yeah, so thanks for clearing that up, Hollywood.
Yeah, you're welcome.
As always, I knew I could count on you. So, yeah, that's one thing that I would have done differently. And then, of course, like I said, our interview with Brian Forsyth got cut short because Roxy Blue at 4 o'clock did a acoustic set from the stage, which was literally 10 feet away from our table. So, and not just our table, everybody else's as well. So that kind of put a dampener on the interviews and everything. So if you're going to have that kind of an event happening, then just schedule interviews around it, you know, so that we're not doing interviews. Because I only had two interviews. I only signed up for a few interviews. And so I would have liked those to be, you know, as good as possible. But that's probably it. And those are just minor things that I saw. Again, the pluses, the pros far outweigh any of the cons, and it's always a learning experience. So I expect, like anything else, there's always going to be opportunity at these events, right?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, and you know, I've said it before, I think you and I would both agree that we are acquired taste personality wise and people were nothing but nice to us, whether it's a fellow podcaster, whether it's the listeners, whether it was a vendor, whether it was an artist, it just did not matter. And I can't thank people enough for just the kindness. Like, that's unbelievable, because I'm not sure I always deserve it. I know you don't deserve it. But anyways.
hey, I'm not an acquired taste. I'm awesome. I look myself in the mirror every morning and say, you're awesome and you will do great things today. Yeah. So speak for yourself.
To all friends of Stephen Michael, if you are riding in a car with him and he's about to park, just have him drop you off at the door, because he's going to go round and round and round until he finds the perfect parking spot and going to end up the farthest away from the door possible anyway.
Listen, I earned that right after finding the parking space I did for lunch on Friday afternoon. Come on, downtown Nashville off of Broadway Street, and I found a parking space on the street right in front of the restaurant. Are you kidding me? That shit only happens to kick-ass people.
Blind squirrel nut right there.
I found it. What's your point? So that's pretty much the weekend. I don't have anything to add. Overall, it was a great weekend. I can't thank Chris and Zach and his team enough. I can't thank all of my podcasting cohorts. Enjoyed the quick but awesome weekend that we shared together. Enjoyed meeting and talking to all the listeners and all of our new friends, who I now consider friends. So just a successful birthday bash, Rockin' Pod 3 weekend for me.
Yep, third one, check, done. Time for number 4.
Yeah, I'll wait for the announcement on that from Chris. We'll see if he wants to do that again. I don't know how long these are going to go or how long he's going to want to continue doing these, but we'll see. Well, do you have anything to add before we put a cork in this year's Rockin' Pod? We will release the Striper live recording that we did at some point. I may edit in a little music to go along with it, but we'll get that out to you folks as well in a separate episode. So until then, is there anything you want to add there, Hollywood?
Nope, just keep the feedback coming and talk to you later.
See ya.
Get ready to shuffle, rattle, and roll. Play us out, boys.
Activity.
Please make sure you subscribe to our podcast, Growing Up Rock, and leave us a review on iTunes. Give us a like and leave us a comment on Facebook at Growing Up Rock.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.